What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Box Out Boys podcast. We are the NBA podcast of the people, your home for lukewarm takes and substandard analysis. I'm Titus Two Shots Dominguez, and joining me tonight, it's Chris, the stats man Gorman. Hit him with the stats, Chris.
Welcome to February 1st, Titus. I am happy to be here. In the month of January, teams played between 14 to 16 games. Minnesota went 11-5 during that stretch, which was tied for third in the league. The Bulls went 7-7 for the month of January. The Bulls also lost games where they had leads of 21, 21, 19, and 16, all in the month of January. So if they had won those games, they would have had as many wins as the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That stings. They also get minutes tonight. It's the Lawn Boss, Joey McCroskey. Get that, Joe.
It's the first month the Bulls were not in the loss column, though. So they ended 500, which is positive. So,
wow. Looking on the bright
side.
You
tell me 7-7. That's like a...
What's their bright side over here?
That's a win.
It's just, he sees red. That's
just call me the killers.
I'm the killers. Because he's Mr. Bright Side. Coming out of his cage tonight. Well, helping us sound as delicious, or making us sound as delicious as Dove, it is the Brunson Burner, Adam the Professional Bruns. At the levels tonight, Adam.
They are delicious.
Delicious. We are off rails and ready to go. The show is going to be fun.
There are no rails.
There are no rails. We are just flying.
We're not even off of them.
Not even off of them. Just, there was no guidance tonight. We got some all-star convo. We're going to give our own starter pools without conference affiliation. That should be fun. We're going to talk a little bit about rivalry week. Talk about some of our favorite rivals. We're going to talk about LeBron's impending record coming up, 89 points away. Pretty big. We're going to talk some other small things, and then we're going to give you a mid-season tournament. We all have some good ideas. So something the NBA has been bandying about, and we want to pitch our own ideas. All right, so let's start up front with the All-Star starter pools. Those came out over the week. The reserves are getting announced tomorrow. If you don't know, it was Curry, Luka, LeBron, Jokic, and Zion in the Western Conference. Donovan Mitchell, Kyrie Irving, Giannis, Tatum, and Durant in the Eastern Conference. So I guess the big kind of topic was over the week was Embiid not being named a starter, even though they're a number two seed in the West. And he's balling out, leads the league in scoring and everything like that. So I challenged the guys, because No Dunks kind of brought this up, that if there was no conference affiliation, that Embiid would have slid in right then for Giannis. But now I ask you guys, if there was no conference affiliation at all, would any of the starting lineups look different? How would your lineups look? Let's go to you, Chris. What was your lineup without any kind of affiliation?
Top lineup without any affiliation, the backcourt, it's the West. It's Stephen Curry and Luka Doncic. Yeah. Followed by, I put Jason Tatum as my number three.
Okay.
I'm curious what you guys say about that. And then number four, I have Giannis. And if I have Jokic, if I did make this a week ago prior to Embiid stomping of Jokic in that Sixers Nuggets game, which could have maybe, you know, flipped the script a little bit, but still feel pretty confident with the Jokic pick as the top guy.
Nice. I like it. And I like what you did there of kind of actually ranking the teams there, of having a top team and then a second team. That's actually kind of cool. Joey, what were your thoughts on kind of your teams? How do they shake out?
Yeah, I also did a top team and kind of like a we'll call it the varsity squad and the junior varsity, A squad, B squad. I'm pretty much player for player for Chris, except instead of Jokic, I put Giannis as the center and I slotted in LeBron at forward with Tatum, and then Luka and Steph as your guards.
And then how'd your second team wind up?
The second team is Jokic, Embiid, Mitchell, Paolo, Banchero, and Lauri Markkanen, because I want to see Lauri Markkanen dunk on somebody in the All-Star
game. Wow. We went way off script on there. Getting Paolo and Lauri in there.
I love it. But
well, you know, it should be fun, right? It's the All-Star game. It's based on how they're doing right at this exact moment, assuming Zion's not playing because he's not healthy. Durant, kind of same thing. So give me some fun. Paolo would be fun. Markkanen,
I like that. I like that because, you know, I didn't think about the Durant thing is not playing. So my team, I didn't do the the top team and the second team. I essentially just took the Western Conference, which was Curry, Luka, LeBron, Jokic, and then I slotted in Embiid for Zion. And then when I went over to the Eastern Conference, the team I actually did like, but without any conference affiliation, I was able to move or go Donovan Mitchell and Ja Morant for my second guard there. Yeah. I kicked Kyrie out to the reserves and then went Giannis, Tatum, and Durant. So, but without Durant in there, yeah, I might have thought about that without injury reserve. That's a good idea. Don't think of it that way.
Joey always took another level to it. When you said Paolo, though, I'm a little like, well, Domantas Sabonis is fun to watch.
Yeah, but like
he loves Paolo.
Like is Sabonis going to give you like a really like exciting play in the All Star game?
No,
he's like a poor man's Jokic,
right?
At this point,
I almost had trouble putting Jokic in there because like.
Yeah, Jokic is on your second team.
Like past All-Star games, like Jokic is not fun. Like he's fun because he's like having a good time, but like he just does the same thing.
He'll throw a pass or something.
Yeah.
Throw a cool pass.
Like I want to see these guys like do fun stuff.
And that's why I went with Ja, because I mean that guy's going to throw down a dunk. He's going to be exciting. I mean, obviously Kyrie's pretty exciting too, but I just felt like, you know, I'd get the younger guy in there, a little guy that's going to talk some trash. I think that's
I also
got to
think too, like people who are actually like care to have fun. Like I almost wanted to consider putting like somebody like Anthony Edwards in here. Like,
yes.
Like
that'd be fun.
I'm all for it.
Like that dude would be an absolute blast in the All-Star game.
He better make it. He's leading the league in points and minutes and put up crazy numbers on a winning team.
Like I don't know. Like that's the problem. Like the conference thing is fine. Like the position thing is still the one that bothers me the most. Is like you're limiting yourself to these things like Let the best guys. I don't know.
So let's go with it.
The All Star game, right? So like every other sport, like there's not like flash involved in their All Star games, right? Like baseball, like the best players actually make a difference. Like you want the best players because they're going to do their normal stuff.
Yeah.
And like the NBA, you kind of want like the best players, but you also want like the flashiest, kind of like most high energy, fun guys. Like you got to find that right balance.
So I thought that was a good idea. That they brought up on No Dunks about having, you know, a no conference affiliation. Because I thought that makes it interesting in case of a situation where you have like four guys or three, you know, backcourt players that are really deserving of one conference, that you can just slide them over and get the top 10 guys in the league. I think that'd be kind of fun. But Joey brings up a really good point, too, of maybe even getting rid of position. What if they did? All right. So for the starter pool, you did, you know, fan voting, everything like that. But you go. You have to have two guards, two forwards, and then you put a wild card spot. So then you're not necessarily, you know, overloaded in the front court. If there's three guards in a conference that are really good, you can bring them in, and then maybe doing it that way. Is that kind of a way that can help out you getting the right guys for the starters?
That could solve it.
That wouldn't really have done anything. Like I guess the only difference would have been maybe Ja would be a starter instead of Zion.
Yeah, maybe in the Western Conference.
In the East, we still have this issue where we have four awesome front court guys.
Yeah.
It's almost like we need two wild cards, which like maybe we should just have
five.
What
if you had four captains, four teams, shrunk the teams down, and you did like
a little 7-on-7?
A little 7-on-7 tournament, and you have three games instead of just one.
Hoo-hoo.
Is this a part of your...
It's your, not, but I just thought of this, and this sounds like it would be awesome. Like, extend the pool just around the board, get four captains, so you'd have LeBron, Durant, Giannis, and Embiid probably this year. Mm-hmm. So you would solve your problem of having all of your necessary big men covered, and then they would just go out and draft. Like, you would get rid of the whole starter concept. Like, you just pick four captains, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then just fill everybody else in.
Go rec league style.
Yeah. Do like a half court kind of thing. 7-on-7, half court. Both games are happening at the same time. And then for the final, you do a full court normal game with the Elam ending.
Kind of do like a tournament, like how they're doing in the Rising Stars kind of game.
Yeah,
that could be cool. And then you can see everybody. Nobody's sitting.
Everybody gets to go. Like it's a shorter game.
I actually like that because then there's no one upset when like Paolo or, you know, there's going to be Washington fans that are going to be upset if Kuzma doesn't make it.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
everyone makes it then.
Because the rosters are small.
DeMar makes it.
Like, there are more than 26 all-star caliber players in the league right now.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, it doesn't have to be massive to the point where it's like, you know, 75 guys, but like you could easily get to like 40 and it wouldn't be like uncontrollable.
Yeah. But if you did four teams of seven, that's what, that's 28 guys? 28,
yeah, so. Yeah,
that's perfect.
Maybe add even a little bit more.
I like it. Let's get weird with it. NBA, we're fixing a lot of your stuff tonight. We're fixing your all-star game. We're fixing your midseason tournament.
Solve all the problems.
All right. Well, let's. The one thing the NBA did. Well, you guys got anything else on all-star? Are you ready to go on?
No. Are you excited for the all-star game this year?
Yeah, I think I am. You're not?
I don't know if I am yet.
Well, I mean, DeMar and Zach aren't probably going to
in. No, that's not even.
That's not doing it.
I'm almost, maybe I got a little fatigue of LeBron and Durant doing the whole captain thing.
Well, I guess I'm excited for the live draft.
The live
this
draft
year.
Is going to be fun.
I think that's going to be really interesting. And I think that might put some energy into it that maybe wouldn't normally be there. Because maybe that
guys
last
are
guy.
Are going to shy away, though, from like doing that? Or do you think they're just going to kind of just pick like what makes most sense?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. It could go kind of boring and chalk and not be interesting, or it could get a little spicy. So we'll see. We'll see which way they go with it. So,
wait for that skills challenge.
Oh, the skills challenge. Hey, I'm giving the dunk contest a chance, another chance. Every year they suck me back in. I'll watch it. All right, well, it was rivalry week over the last week. What was it, Tuesday to Saturday was rivalry week?
Yes.
Rivalry week? That was
rivalry.
Weird way to say.
All right.
Rivalry.
Rivalry week. All right, there rivalry. We go. Rivalry. There were some fun games. You know, we had the LeBron foul no call in the Boston game late. Christ. Hey, we won't get into it. We could talk about it. That happened. There's some fun games in the morning. Like you said, the Embiid-Jokic game happened over on that Saturday too, so that was kind of fun. But it got me thinking, guys. What were your favorite NBA rivalries? Joey, let's start with you here on this one, man. Do you remember, like, maybe go back to when you were a kid, maybe going back to when you were kind of, you know, aware of what was going on. What are some rivalries you remember?
Yeah, so I wanted to think about ones when I was a kid, and I felt like that was just cheating because, I don't know. I felt like I was cheating because, like, I don't remember them all that well. I remember them more as an adult, you know, but...
Yeah.
I also thought, too, like, can you actually have like a vested interest in a rivalry if it doesn't involve like a team that you support? Like, should that actually matter to you? Like, part of the rivalry being exciting is that like you're actually emotionally invested in this. Like you have a hatred for the team that you're up against. So I came up with two, and these will probably not surprise you guys in any way, shape, or form. But the D Rose Bulls against the Big Three Celtics.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Mostly for the playoff series, right? The Rondo Heinrich battles and Joakim Noah breakaway dunk and the overtime, like all that. And then obviously the D Rose Bulls and LeBron's Heat. Some might say that really wasn't even a rivalry because Bulls never really did much against it, but. I mean, the Bulls had them in the regular season, right? All those seasons, they always had the top record against them in the regular season, right?
Yeah.
And there was just so much kind of bad blood there and just, I don't know. So those two, but I had to pick, I think the Celtics won more so just because like that one was like physical and like that one was violent and like there was like trash talk and everything kind of had it going there. And that was kind of the first like coming of that Bulls squad, right? That was the first kind of like, moment of when they were there and people kind of Derrick Rose set the record for like most points in his first playoff game as a rookie or first playoff game, whatever it was at that point. Yeah. I'm sure that record is long gone by now, but like that was the moment that they were there. They arrived and kind of set the stage. So
true.
And that plus, one, I that was the first like big three too, right? Like the Celtics, like that was the first like super villain team.
Yeah. And the Bulls were like homegrown and
took care of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. The Bulls didn't win that series, though, right?
They didn't.
But it felt like they could have won that series.
But they felt like they could have easily won that series, yeah.
That was a good one. Chris, you got any ones, or you said you were...
I was thinking about the Bulls Heat one, but like Joey said, I didn't think it was much of a rivalry because the Heat kept winning. LeBron kept hitting clutch shots.
I hated those. I hated that team.
My rivalry wasn't much of a rivalry. It was just... I just remember Jason Terry in the finals, in 2011 finals against the Heat, and like LeBron and Wade were knocking him down, and then Terry said, you can't guard, or you're not going to be able to stop me for all the games. And then he just went off games 3 through 6. So I don't know how much of a rivalry it was, because then the Mavericks didn't try to really hold the title the next year.
What about even the Heat mocking Dirk for being sick, right? That he was faking it. And
that's why that whole series was a rivalry. Yeah.
That whole series.
But it wasn't season.
No, that's a perfect example. So my rivalries, I ended up with a couple examples. Like Joey, I went with a rivalry that wasn't a team that I'm affiliated with, but I was really invested in. And then I went with a one series rivalry that I remember from when I was a kid. So the one that I wasn't invested in was the Spurs Heat rivalry. Back when they had the Heatles and all that stuff. They played in the finals 2 times. Heat won the first time with the miraculous Ray Allen shot. And the Tim Duncan missing the layup was one of the craziest series I've ever watched. And then the Spurs came back the next year, played the Heat again, 1-5. It was amazing. That was the first time me and Chris ever started trying to do a podcast was during those series. Yeah. So I remember them fondly.
We recorded 2 of them.
Yep, we recorded two like hour long episodes of stuff. It was pre-Joey. So we weren't the Boxout Boys then, but it was. Oh man, I remember. I remember a lot of rivalries from when I was a kid, like Bulls Utah and all that stuff. But that's the one I vividly remember, because everybody hated the Heat at the time. They kind of had those two earlier series, the Mavericks and then the Thunder one, that weren't the Mavericks one was kind of contested, but they didn't come back and defend. Thunder, same thing. They were kind of the young team that wasn't ready to go back. And then you had the Spurs that were supposed to get them that first time, and then came back for revenge. It was awesome. I remember those games a lot. And the other one that I remember from my childhood was Bulls-Pacers. So that was the one I was invested in. I'm a young man at the time, super invested in the Bulls. I went to look back. I thought they had played each other multiple times in the playoffs. They only played once in that last three-peat. It was the Eastern Conference Finals of the 98 championship. They went to 7. The Bulls 1-7. And it just was a wild. I just very much remember hating Reggie Miller, hating Mark Jackson. Jalen Rose was on that team. Rick Smith, the tall, goofy guy, was like the Pacers' best player, actually. I went and looked at some stats. It was pretty wild. What was really wild is Jordan led all scorers in all 7 games, and by like a wide margin. He averaged 31 points a game. Guess who was the next best player, either team, and what their point total was per game?
I want to see Scottie Pippen.
Okay, it was close. How many points do you think he was?
Like 15.
All right, Joey.
So it wasn't Scotty.
It wasn't Scotty, but he's around the point total.
Horace Grant.
No. Well, the next in the entire series, it was Reggie Miller, and he had 17 points.
Yeah. Well, when you said that, the guy's name. Well, Rick Smith was the best player on the Pacers.
Yeah, you were thinking.
I was like, okay, got to be
Reggie. Well, he had like multiple 20-point games. Too, right? Yeah. Well, I think he dominated the Bulls inside in a couple of games. Wolfram also a wild, like a fun little stat from this guy. I was looking back, dude, I got deep in this. I started looking into the play-by-plays. Game 6, Jordan had one of his best games. He scored 35 in game 6, but completely botched the end. I can't remember exactly what happened. He either missed a couple of free throws and then turned the ball over and gave the guys, the Pacers, their free throws to seal the game. So I thought it was kind of funny. But then, they won in game 7, so...
He does no wrong, though.
He does no wrong, though. Yeah, but I was like, "Hey, where?"
Speak about that.
It was very interesting. But those were my rivalries, man. Did you guys like Rivalry Week?
I did. I will say I didn't expect that I would hear the term the Heatles tonight, and I almost threw up
the Heatles. And so I forgot about that.
Thank you, for doing that to me. No, I did. I think they should push it more.
Yeah,
like, it was Rivalry Week, but like it was not like pushed that hard, I felt like. And like some of the teams, like the Bulls matchup was the Hornets.
Or Hornets.
Because they wanted LaMelo and Lonzo to play. And then they pulled it off of TNT anyways.
Yeah.
And then the Bulls blew a 16-point lead in that game. Nice.
Nice. Classic.
But yeah, I like the idea of it. I mean, The Sixers Nets was a good one, right? Simmons yeah, being Simmons. There. So that's all. That was fun. Speaking of Ben Simmons, no responses. That Trey Kirby said Mason Plumlee is better than Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I hadn't watched that clip, and then I watched listened to the pod today. And I was
crickets
like,
from Titus.
I guess he was. I was trying to get a rise out of you. Don't think Ben Simmons is all that good, man. I like him. I support him, but like I can't really. He's not playing great, man.
Finally, there it is. No, I like Rivalry Week though. I think it's cool. I think they should probably push it more.
Yeah.
They should. What they should do is they should do their little back to back thing that they got going.
Yeah,
baseball series like that should be how rival. I can't.
It's hard to say it.
That should be how things work.
That should be how the week goes, right? Like you should get like Grizzlies, Warriors, and
back to back,
Golden State, and then Grizzlies, Warriors the next or two nights later in Memphis. And
do it
like that would be much more. Like, I don't know. Give me some of that. Let the fire burn.
Let it burn for a couple nights. I like that. Well, speaking of Heatles. We'll say
should
it again.
There's a comment. Should we?
Yeah, we can do it now. Yeah.
I don't know when we want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, let's
put it up here. All right. Question for Baskets. Who would you say is the middle child on the Bulls team right now and why?
Zach, right?
No, the middle child is Vooch.
I was thinking that.
But. Zach is the oldest. He can do no wrong. Like in the Bulls' eyes, right? Like he's like the.
Okay.
DeMar is the youngest. We're like. He's like everybody's favorite and like he just kind of like coasts about and like does his thing and everybody loves him no matter what happens. Zach just like is the cocky, like I'm the best, but like everybody beneath him, like the middle and youngest are kind of like, eh, are you? Like they kind of question it, but they don't really say it out loud. The middle child is Vooch.
I kind of thought the middle child was Patrick Williams. He's kind of like the polite, forgotten guy.
That's a good one.
Kind of like does a little bit here and there.
Yeah, you could either one of them, I think, work. Both polite.
Yeah, Vooch just kind of makes Vooch. I kind of looked at as like the forgotten oldest child.
He's the redheaded stepchild.
You know, doing his thing.
Yeah, I guess this probably depends a lot on your family dynamic and what the middle child is like in your family. So that's a good one, though. Good question, Baskets.
It's a dysfunctional family in any way you look at it.
Certainly is.
Yeah, not very happy right now.
All right, well, let's talk about LeBron's impending record. We talked about it. He's 89 points away from Kareem. Should be what, 2-3 games here? Should get this done. The pace is going.
What's he at now? 80, what'd you say?
89.
89.
I think three games. Unless he goes off for like 50 in one game.
I think he's going to do it in two. He's going to drop like a 50 and then a nice and then easy like 35.
A 38, then a comfortable 38.
Yeah. 50 and 35 does not equal 80.
It's all right. I was thinking 51, and he's going to go 38 in the next.
What's their schedule? What's their?
Ooh, I forgot. I knew it. I think it's the Pacers are coming up.
So they've got Pacers tomorrow. Like that's good for 30. Pelicans on Saturday.
No Zion.
OKC on Tuesday.
Is it in OKC though?
No, at home.
At home. That's probably when he's going to do it then. At home, OKC is not going to care too much.
Yeah. So Pacers and Pelicans are both on the road.
And then, 30.
If he doesn't get it, then he's going to do it against the Bucks.
Ooh.
On Thursday the 9th.
That would be kind of cool.
I think that's what they,
I think that's what they want.
that'd be four games, yeah. So
that's how the script's written.
22 apiece. Because
he probably takes a night off or something in there in the mix. If he what game did he take off, though?
He's got gaps, right? So Thursday, and he's got Saturday, and Saturday to Tuesday.
I guess he's got time.
He's got the rest built in. I think he does it Tuesday against Oklahoma City.
I think so too. At home, that feels right. This is a pretty cool record, man. It's something that's. He's going to be the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. It's wild. But it had me thinking, guys. One, is this his biggest crowning achievement? You know, everybody calls him the king. Is this his crowning achievement of his career? Because he's not going to get to like six championships or anything like Jordan. He's not going to ever break that, I don't think. And then it got me thinking, which is the hardest record or which record has the best chance of falling? Curry's three-point record, which we all saw in our last season, or LeBron's all-time point leader. Chris, what are your thoughts on those two things?
This all-time scoring record, Among active players, Kevin Durant is 16th with 26,000 points. He's still 12,000 points behind LeBron. This is it's incomprehensible to really explain how many points this is. It's like trying to say how much a billion is, right? It's just too much of a number. Even though this is 40,000, I guess. But anyways, no, this is ridiculous. I think with the way the league is going with the three-point, I mean, what Curry's doing, he's the most efficient three-point shooter of all time. But I still feel like there's some 10-year-old out there right now
just get
that's developing his shot, that's getting his shots up. And you go on TikTok Live, there's a guy that just shoots threes for hours and hours every day, getting, you know, streaks going. So I think eventually that would happen. But I honestly, the durability, the longevity, he's 38 years old, averaging 30 points a game right now. I don't see this record being broken in my lifetime.
No, I don't either. Joey, what do you think though?
So I'll counter with this. The way the league is now versus it was for LeBron's first half of his career is different, right?
Like point-plation?
You're seeing 40-point games become very common.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And the likelihood of players coming in now playing into the realm of, you know, a 38-year-old is probably more likely than it was for the group of players in the NBA now, right?
Like, yeah.
LeBron is the anomaly because nobody has done this before, but you would assume that players are going to play longer just based on, you know, advances in health and training and all this stuff, right? And the more rest minutes and rest days and all this stuff. So I think just with the higher point totals and guys playing potentially longer, I could see this record at some point going down.
Do you think there's somebody in the NBA right now that could beat it, that could beat that record?
I don't think right now. I think, well, maybe. I think if it is, it's like a
Luka, like, maybe.
Yeah, Luka, like a Luka, or like it's somebody, you know, very young who if you look at their points, they're probably, you know, 20,000 points behind. But
yeah.
Yeah, the pointflation thing is the only thing that makes me kind of think that like Giannis might not be a bad pick.
With him not having the threes though, that's my kind of question. I have to say, I don't know where he's at points wise for his career and what his averages are. But yeah, I mean,
he's 134th at 15,000 points right now.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty good.
He's tied with Lou Williams currently.
7 years in the league or something? Yeah. 8 years. He's got a lot of time left. I think kind of Chris is right. It's gonna be somebody that plays 20 years at least. They're gonna have to be getting buckets, so you know, a scorer, and then just playing all those minutes, like you said, because even you brought up the point of, you know, guys resting, that might hurt guys if, you know, they're only playing 60, 70 games a season.
I kind of countered my own point there, didn't I?
Yeah, I didn't think about it until, like, as you were saying, I was like, well, that might, I wonder if that would be a problem. But also, if they're getting 3 or 4 more extra seasons, you know what I mean, out of it, because, yeah.
It's kind of weird, is like in terms of three-pointers made, so, like, I looked at the Steph record a little bit. LeBron has over 1,000 less three-pointers made than Steph does.
Yeah.
Wild.
And he still has that many points.
Yeah. He's ridiculous. A lot of
free throws.
Isn't he? Like, he's top 10 in rebounds and assists, too, I think, too.
Fourth in assists.
Jesus, man.
Nuts.
He's a beast, man. But do you guys think this would be the achievement he'll be known best for?
I think when you bring up, like, the arguments, this is a pretty solid. Pretty, like, he's going to have 40,000 points. He's going to be second in assists, only behind Stockton, because Stockton's assist total is probably the hardest one to actually catch. He's going to be like top 5 in rebounds. Like, those are the achievements that are going to be like, he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah,
but like a lot of those points came in like seasons where they didn't win a championship. Like,
right. And that's why we're just going to have it like LeBron's
didn't
the best
make the playoffs
single player
two seasons
ever,
in a row.
And then Jordan's the best winner.
Just, that's what I'll say. I think this is probably going to be his crowning achievement.
It should be.
But I think that Cavs championship will always kind of have a little sparkle for me. Just like the way he took down the Warriors 73-9 team, coming back from 3-1, never been done before. It was just, I don't know, man. That one might be
he created a super team because of that.
Anyways, but I think those are the two. It's going to be like the all-time counting stats he's going to have, like Chris was saying, rebounds and assists, he's going to be way up there. So I think it's pretty cool, though. We're watching history. Are you guys going to make a point to watch the game once we kind of know when it's going to be?
So
I think so, too.
I made a point to watch Steph's game, so I'll make sure.
Looking back at the Steph one, I felt like that was a little silly. Anyways, we'll see how they celebrate this LeBron much. One. Just because they called a timeout, they got like a a violation or whatever. It was just like, all right, the game just started, guys. Like, come on.
Hey, you know what? He needed his moment. LeBron will get his too. All right, another fun thing. Oh, go ahead.
A little bit just on Steph's record. This is crazy to me. So he's made 3,290 three-pointers, which worked out to like 3.8 per game. The next closest active player to him is Harden, who's at 2,686, which is 2.7 per game. So,
whoa.
Assuming
that's insane.
Like,
you're averaging 4 three-pointer makes a game. So that's 12 points just in 3 points. Sorry. Yeah.
Keep going. Yeah. So like this is, let me do the 3-point, then I'll say my last point. So like, assuming Steph and Harden both play, call it 4 more years, right? That puts Steph at like 38, Harden at 37, give or take, right? If they keep up at their same pace, Steph would end with 4,468, Harden would end 3,523. If Harden doubled his output and played 4 more years, I put him at like 70 games a year, assuming they sit out some.
Yeah.
He would still be over 250 three-pointers short.
Wow.
Of Steph. And he'd have to make over 5 three-pointers a game.
That is nuts.
So that was wild to me.
You might be right. Steph one might be untouchable. Just the way he's shooting.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah. So the thing for me was like, if LeBron has a scoring title with only making 2,230 three-pointers, right? So that's 1,000 less than Steph. If everybody's shooting the three-pointer, maybe somebody can get to that point. Like, they're not going to hit 1,000 more, than LeBron, but maybe they hit 500 more, and that's a pretty big boost over LeBron's number. So,
interesting, man. I just think, hey, this just goes to show we're watching two of the greatest players to ever play the game right now. This is one of the greatest eras ever, man. It's wild. All right, a fun little thing I noticed watching games over this weekend. There was a shot distance graphic. Do you guys like it? Was it interesting? And if so, was there any other information you want to see displayed on the thing? Joey, what do you think, man?
I do like it. I do like the shot distance graphic. Because I've always wondered when the announcers call out, 17 footer. It's like, do you really know that's 17 foot? Or like, are you just kind of picking a reference point?
It's an
point?
Estimate. Yeah.
Right. So I don't hate it. I don't hate that it flashed up on there. Go ahead, Chris. No, go ahead.
I don't understand the backlash.
Yeah,
people are hating on it.
Because it's too distracting? Is this people like the weird, NHL thing when they put the red streak behind the puck and then
I thought it was thousands? Cool.
Oh yeah, the red streak. There's a delay on that thing. Yeah. But it's a little, it says 25 FT.
Yeah.
And it lets me know if he did 25 or 28, if he did 30, 33. We're watching Lillard, it's 30 all the time.
I think it's fine.
It's fun. I don't care. We're not seeing percentage. I remember baseball did they showed the percentage of everything for every single play, and that got a little distracting. What we're doing here is just, this is good.
This information. The only things I came up with, I thought would be kind of cool, is vertical leap on a jump. Or a dunk, particularly. So if a guy goes to dunk, and then you also used to see a 44 inches on there or something.
I like that.
That would be pretty sick.
A little sports science thing. A little sports science pops in there. Up and shows you the game. Yeah, I like that.
And then also thought of speed. So when a guy starts taking off, a little, MPH behind him.
That's a little soccer trick there.
You can see how fast these guys are going.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's a good one.
That's funny.
I had down percentages for field goal attempts.
Okay.
It kind of goes against, but like non-layups, like jump shots, like give me a little right beneath their feet, something small that just says like their percentage and then the league percentage. Like help me understand if that's a good shot or a bad shot.
That's actually pretty interesting.
I don't mind that ESPN3. They do an analytics.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Like an alternate broadcast that you can tune into.
Analytics broadcast.
Yeah. Because
it's
right
got
now,
all this stuff.
It's just all based on the announcer telling you if that's a good shot or a bad shot.
Yeah.
And Stacey King's view of a bad shot and a good shot is not really a good, read on what it actually is.
I mean, Zach pulls up from something and you flash a 20% on there. He's 20% from that area.
Right.
You're like, what are you doing, Zach?
Right.
You're killing me. But
like, you would put in context for some of this stuff. Like, you would put in context for guys that are taking bad shots and missing them. Be like, okay, this is like, stop doing it. And it would put into context for some people like Lillard, right? Pulls up from 30 all the time. It's like, hey, his percentage from here is, you know, 44, but the league percentage is 27. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, like, wow. All right, yeah, you like, can take those shots.
This is special. What I'm seeing actually makes sense. And like the casual fan would understand that.
I like this. And I also like the idea of the analytics cast for nerds like us that want to watch this. NBA needs to be listening. We got gems. We're throwing out gems here.
Give me the same announcers. I don't need like a...
Yeah.
I don't need like a stats person like talking very calmly and slow to me. Like same announcers, but just give me more graphics on this on the page.
Give me Hubie. Give me Doris. It's fine. And then... Anything else here on this shot graphic?
I thought about...
Oh, yeah. Keep going.
Sorry. I thought about a stat that I don't want to see on screen, but I think should be added. And Chris, you read about this in the book we both read. Ty, I need to give you the book. But guys getting assists for foul attempts. So like if you make a pass to somebody and they go up for like a what should be a for sure layup and they get like hacked and they don't make it, but then they make their free throws, like the person should get the assist for that.
That's a good
So it's kind of like how should QBs get passing yards attributed for pass interference calls?
For yak? Oh.
Hmm. Yeah, they should. If there's like a decent likelihood, I guess in football though it's different because you don't know if that guy would have caught that either way.
Well, I think they throw the flag because it was a catchable ball.
A catchable ball, but it's not a guarantee he catches it. Like I'm saying, the guy has to go to the free throw line and make the free throws. If he misses the free throws. Then,
no
like,
assists.
No assists. Like the points didn't happen.
That'd
like,
be so funny.
But like you could,
if he misses, they're like, what the hell, man?
It's the same thing, right? If he misses the easy layup, you don't get the assist. But if he gets fouled and he goes to the free throw line and he makes the free throws, like that's the same outcome. You got the same outcome whether he made the shot or the free throw. So the guy should get the assist.
And I like this because it sets up a potential of adding an additional assist so that somebody could actually catch Stockton. And then when they do,
ooh, juicy, we the can guy, argue about is it real or not?
Argue if it's real or not, but then it could potentially get their overtaking assist on a foul, and the guy could be at the line knowing that if he misses these, he's no longer part of history and is not the guy that got the assist. And if he makes them, his boy gets to be overstocked. I like this.
Do you think guys would care about free throws more?
Maybe. They should be caring about free throws anyway. They're free points.
Only are you letting down like the score, but like you're letting down like your teammate's chance at like a triple double or like.
But you're letting down your teammates when you miss a free throw, anyways.
Yeah, but like it's double now. Like it's their personal stats.
Is Ben Simmons going to start working on his free throws now?
Maybe.
How do you guys feel about when guys miss free throws and still do the high fives?
That's all right. It's like a hey.
I think it's the dumbest thing ever.
I think the high five should just go away completely on a free throw. Do you really need like? High fives after every shot making basketball need to go away.
Well, so that was in the book we both read, Mid-Range Theory.
It's like the concept of the game is to make the basket. Like when you make a jumper, you don't need to high five someone.
They talked about how like there's a correlation to teams that high five have a higher correlation to winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when positive team high fives, it kind of just dilutes the data. Can't do anything with that.
You can have positive reinforcement and like be happy, but like
camaraderie.
No, then becomes stupid when
guys like running back on defense and trying to high five, and then they're like out of the play is like the most frustrating thing in the world. It's like, is that high five that important?
I guess if it gets in the way of the game, don't do it.
We're always about that.
Got to be about. All right, anything else? Or we move on to our midseason tournament ideas.
I need to sneak in my. I know.
You got to do something here.
You didn't want me to do this.
No, because I need some apropos of nothing. But go for it.
I need to talk about this because the no dunks. Who we all respect as they've been doing the podcast for like the last 10 years or 15 years. Who knows how long they've been doing the pod. They had some Sumpstetter analysis that I was really disappointed in reading or in hearing when they were talking about the Kings-Timberwolves game that went into overtime. Trey Kirby at the 14-minute mark on the podcast on Tuesday, yesterday's podcast, mentioned how Jaden McDaniels traveled going into... going for the game tying three-pointer that went into overtime.
Uh-oh.
It was an amazing shot.
Man, we're trying to do
really happy for Jaden McDaniels. Guy's really grown right before our eyes. Bucketlist.fans, site I've talked about before, has all the highlights of every make that happens at every single game. Shout out. And I just want to show you guys this play because I'm sure you guys didn't see you were watching this game like I was on.
Nobody watched this
on game. Monday night.
Go for it. Play it back.
And here we go. And Jaden McDaniels is right over here.
Hey, Chris's segment idea. This is great because it's
stopping
now.
In between.
I think we need to ban the.
So then this
ban
way
the play, is the play, the illustrator.
Ban the playback.
We'll be able to see. So here. His left
You're
foot.
You're freezing up hard, Chris. And nobody's seeing anything.
How am I now? Do you see anything
right now? No, I can't see anything.
Keep going.
Just, let's worry in it. Right, worry in it now.
He's got
it.
The ball.
Here's the play.
Here's his left pivot foot.
He's got the ball.
Right?
All right.
He dribbles, resets his feet, takes a three. Hits the three, right? Where's the travel? His foot was down. Done. What are we doing?
I have not seen the play, so I can't comment.
Trey Kirby is dead wrong about this being a travel call. The referees, according to the L2M report, reviewed this and mentioned that McDaniels established his left foot as his pivot foot and legally fits his right foot underneath. Call was correct. Kings had no reason to be upset that there was no travel call in this play. That's what I got to say.
Well, got that off your chest.
I feel like Chris needs to moonlight as like the guy that they call when like a foul happens, like a flagrant, and they're like, let's go to so-and-so in New York and ask him, this is a flagrant one or a flagrant two.
Yeah.
I feel like Chris's breakdowns would be just fantastic. Well, guys, you can see here that there's definite contact to the head. It was not intentional, but we'll see what they say. It was contact, so it could be a flag. I would.
Chris, what would you have called on the LeBron foul? No foul. Ooh. What would you have called?
Good question.
I watched
everybody
it
in the arena was even it was at Madison Square or was at TD Garden, and even the Celtics fans were still saying that was a foul. And the Celtics fans are the most biased fans in the league.
When they're admitting against the Lakers and LeBron,
but did he need to fall on the ground?
I think he was pissed. Just LeBron. He's just so dramatic, dude. This is him.
I think being pissed was fine. Like the hands up in the air and like the stomping, but like the fall on the ground. I mean,
I'm not gonna. I hate when people like react to how somebody else reacted to a situation. Like reacted the way he did. The more important thing is that the call was wrong and the referees are to blame. I don't care how he reacted. Yeah,
I would support the reaction
for that.
I would support the reaction if that play lost in the game. They still had overtime. Also, my other point, if your teammate is Patrick Beverley and his reaction to it is bringing a camera from a guy in the sideline reporter and like showing it to the ref, if that whole interaction is less dramatic than you.
No, see, I was like, more annoyed with that.
Dude, that was amazing.
I thought that was amazing. I was like, that's not even dramatic. Like, that's like, hey, dude, you fucked up and you need to see it. Like, you fucked up.
But isn't that what got him the technical?
It is. And it shouldn't have been a technical because they were wrong and they're had proof. Wrong. And that's fantastic.
Right.
So, like, to me, I was like, see, that's a guy. I don't like Pat Bev. You guys know this.
I don't either.
But this is a moron that has nothing to do with anything. Like, LeBron is, I get it. LeBron was dramatic. But, like, it's LeBron James and he got fouled and he missed a shot that should have won the game. All right. Pat Bev has nothing to do with anything. He's just being a troll and is like, look at this picture over here. And he's doing something over the top that then gets a point, you know, for the other team, like hurting the team on top of it. Like, dude, what are you doing, man? Sit down.
Yeah.
It was a bad call. You don't need to throw gas on it, man. I mean, LeBron was already being dumb enough.
Tap Jaylen Brown on the head, which was stupid because Jaylen Brown was going for a two when they're down by three with 5 seconds left. And if Pat Bev just didn't do anything on that play, the Lakers would have won. So a lot of things there where Pat Bev kind of lost them in the game in a way. I mean, the refs were even more
egregious.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get into where we're getting. I think this is going to be a little long segment too. So let's go ahead and get into our mid-season tournament. So this has been rumored for forever. They want to do a mid-season tournament. January seemed like a good time because it kind of sucks for basketball. Nobody really wants to watch. Nobody wants to play. You guys came up with some ideas. Who wants to go first? Anyone of you guys?
I'll let Joey go first. Damn.
Joey?
Okay.
I'll go first if you guys want me to go first.
No, I'll go first. That's fine.
All right.
All right.
I'm curious how we have. All right. Here's where the setup is going to be. Tell us how you decide which teams are involved in this tournament. Tell us what the stakes are, and then any kind of formatting that is going to happen.
Okay. So I'm doing a mid-season tourney.
All right.
And it happens All-Star Week. I think you extend All-Star Week by a little bit, maybe 3 days or something like that.
All right. Get this tourney in.
So the teams involved are the current 6 through 10 seeds in both conferences. So that's 5 teams from each conference.
Yep.
And the teams are broken down to only consist of their non-All-Star players. Mm. So the All-Stars are actually taken out of these teams.
Okay.
Those 10 teams then enter into a single elimination bracket tournament where the seed from the Eastern Conference faces the same numbered seed from the Western Conference. So 6 faces 6, 7, 7, so on and so forth. They do single elimination all the way through, all the way down to an eventual winner. The eventual winner, players get some monetary compensation, you know, something to keep them kind of interested. But the team benefit is there's a guaranteed entry into the draft lottery.
Okay, we're on the same page then.
It's not like, you know, hey, you get the same as the number one pick or number two pick, but you get, you know, some sort of addition, right? So
yeah.
My thought is, like, the teams that are 1 through 5, you're likely considering, like, you know, chance at winning a championship. So their prize is the playoffs and potential NBA finals. The teams, you know, below the 10 seed are, you know, lottery teams. They're getting the increased in ping pong balls. The teams in the middle have no incentive, right? Like, if you're in a 7 seed, like, I'm not good enough to actually get a chance to win the finals, but I'm not bad enough to get into the lottery. Like, so this gives them a chance to, like, hey, you can keep playing the regular season the way it is. You keep doing, like, your normal self. Like, you don't incentivize tanking, but you also don't really disincentivize it. But you give this little, like, splash of, like, 3 or 4 days where these teams without their all-stars kind of go at it and say, like, there's something to play for here. And it gives them a little bit of chaos, gives you a chance to see people, like, on the national stage that you probably wouldn't see all the time.
Yeah.
And it helps some of these teams that are in basketball hell maybe get out of basketball hell by having a shot at a pick.
That is pretty interesting. I'm going to go next here because I think we kind of had the same idea as far as the stakes. We just kind of did it slightly different. So maybe we can hybridize our two takes and then we'll hear what Chris is. So what I came up with is the midseason tournament happened around this time, or, you know, All-Star Weekend, like that. But it would be the teams that missed the playoffs last season. So this is not the like the 9th through 15th seeds. This is the teams that actually missed the playoffs, the teams that did not win the tournament. Or the play-in teams.
So the Kings would be in this tournament.
Yeah, so here was, like, my roster. And this is from the previous season. So this season's tournament would be comprised of the 7 teams or 14 teams that missed the playoffs from last season, which each conference it was, and they would be seeded by their ranking. So the Eastern Conference seedings would be from last season was the Cavs, Hornets, Knicks, Wizards, Pacers, Pistons, and Magic. And then the Western Conference seedings would be Clippers, Spurs, Lakers, Kings, Blazers, Thunder, Rockets. So then these teams would be entered into a single elimination tournament. The 2 number one seeds would get a bye because of the way that the structure goes out. So in this case, it would be the Cavs and the Clips would get a bye. Mm-hmm. It set up some interesting matchups. So that set up. So the way I did it was that the 2 seed played the lowest seed from the other conference back and forth. So all conferences mixed. Okay. So East played West and so on. So the way it worked out was that the Hornets played the Rockets, the Knicks played the Thunder, the Wizards played the Blazers, the Spurs played the Magic, the Lakers played the Pistons, and the Kings played the Pacers in round one. Then in round two, after those single eliminations, the Cavs and Clips would have been added back in, the number one seeds, and they would play the remaining lowest seed. So in this case, it would be the Cavs, Rockets, and I played it out. I pretended like they won, and the Clips would play the Magic. And then the other matchup was the Thunder versus the Blazers and the Lakers versus the Kings. And then single elimination, you'd move on to the next round. You'd have a semifinals and then the finals. And the winner of this tournament would get 5% lottery chance. So if they are not in the lottery, they get a 5% chance, like Joey said, basically at entry into the lottery, 5% chance. If they are in the lottery, they get 5% added to their eventual lottery position. So I figured this is a pretty good stake because I looked at the way that the lottery odds were from last season. So the number one seed has 14% chance, right? Mm-hmm. So if you were to win this tournament, you would automatically be the ninth, have the ninth best chance of anybody.
No matter where you land at the end of the season.
Yeah, no matter where you land at the end of the season, you're guaranteed at least a ninth best chance of getting the number one pick or a top four pick or whatever it is. And then, so if we were to use the teams that we use. So I figured, look, hey, would the Cavs go hard? No. Would the Lakers go hard? Probably not. They're probably thinking playoffs. They're probably not, LeBron's not playing in this. He's not worried about this. Draft picks. So the teams that might be interested would be like a young team that was bad last year, but is maybe a little bit better this year. So I'm looking at OKC, the Magic. Because even if you're the Kings and you're kind of moving towards the older guys, hey, you get a top four pick. Now that's a trade asset, and maybe you can go get yourself a guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I use the standings based on where they are now. And if those teams won, if OKC won, they would move from the 11th position to the 8th position. So they would increase. If the Kings won, they're right now out of the lottery, but they would move to the 9th position. So obviously a big chance for them. And if the Magic were to win, they would go from the 5th best chance to the clear number 1 best chance. I thought that was enough incentive to get teams going. And then obviously there would be financial compensation for the players. Keep them interested. Thoughts?
Okay.
Okay. I like it. My only concern, I think the Kings are a good example of it. So like last season, right, when they made the trade for Sabonis, they were so far gone that it didn't make a difference. But once that they got a full season under their belt, like they're going to be a good team, right? So let's be fun here and say that they have a chance of winning the title, right? So like they go out and win the title this year, but they also win this tournament because at the end of last season, right, their front half of the 22 season was so shit that they couldn't make it up. But now they've got De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis and whatever, but they also have a 9% chance at the first pick in the draft.
They win Wembanyama.
Right. And they get Wembanyama. Like, is that where you want, like, the Kings are probably a bad example because, like, but, like, I don't know. Like,
I think you had a better way of making it incentivizing for those mid-tier teams. My thought was like, all right, so if you're a bad 1 year, and let's say you miss, you don't get the guy, but you improve. You, like a Kings example or like the Clippers where it was a weird thing where Kawhi's out, so now they were in the lottery, and now they're a really good team. It just means that you have that chance the next year to then be a good team, win this tournament, and still get an improved draft compensation. But
my biggest fear in the whole scenario is like, during an off season, you could improve your team, and potentially still be entered into this tournament, right?
Yeah,
like you could have a ton of cap space and make a bunch of trades in the off season and get significantly better, but because you were crap the last season, you get in this tournament.
I think the issue I have with the reward is being in Minnesota, they do not have their draft picks for the foreseeable future. So, what's the incentive for a team like Minnesota to be in this tournament?
None. Ooh, no, I think that's a weird one.
I think it's a
guarantee. I think it's like if you win this tournament, like no one's taking that pick. Like
No. I was thinking you would lose your pick. If you don't have your picks because of trade, those don't come back to you. You don't get an extra pick.
All right, then.
That was my one thing.
And that deal doesn't work. Like, because then what team would play in that? Like, there's no point.
If they didn't have their pick, yeah.
Maybe it's like a half. Maybe it's like it gets cut in half. Like your percentage goes down. Oh. Yeah. Like if you have a 9%, you get a 4.5% now.
Okay. Let's.
Yeah. Sorry. We got a little numbers there. All right, Chris, what was your idea?
I got the idea, Chris.
It's a good
point. My idea is what is the format of this? We are doing a 3v3. Single elimination tournament. I thought about round robin. We can figure out those semantics if we want, whatever. Every team is involved. You pick three players on each team, whatever three players you want. If there's some guys that want to sit out, if Kawhi has to sit for whatever, just use somebody else, it's fine. So the point is we need to create an incentive for why you want to be in this tournament. So it's only by the conference. So we only have the East plays the East and the West plays the West, right? Whoever wins in the, you know, in each conference, first place gets a 5-win boost going into the next round. So you get like a plus 5-win total in your standing. Second gets 3, third gets 1 win. Then the winner from each conference meets in the championship, and the winner of that conference gets home court advantage in the NBA Finals, which is how MLB does it with their All-Star game. Yeah. It's always an electric All-Star game. So I'm trying to still work out the prize because I want some kind of incentive for the players to actually want to win this game and be a part of it. So I figured like, oh, maybe like an artificial win boost would be something. So that's where I'm at, 3v3. What are you guys thinking?
When does this tournament happen?
Mid-season.
Okay.
The only, I don't like the win total, like adding to the win total, that I don't like, because I'm like, I don't know, that feels weird.
I don't know
how to get the players to care.
How do you incentivize the players more?
Yeah, because the organization is going to care about a draft pick or about something like that, but
yeah, the players don't care about the
they don't increased care about the draft percentages.
It's a good point. It actually probably dislike it, right? Because it's potentially somebody who's going to take their job,
their job, right?
That's kind of what I thought of. Like, you have to have money for the players.
The win total is kind of interesting, though.
I was playing around with something, but I couldn't figure out a way to do it with. Would it be a tiebreaker or something? Could you have a tiebreaker?
Yeah, I mean, that's another idea, right? So maybe the top team wins a tiebreaker. But like tiebreakers, what is a tiebreaker right now? Isn't it like matchup? So or in season matchup?
Yeah. This is a matchup.
But this tiebreaker would trump all, basically.
I kind of thought about the 5-win boost. It would only come into effect if, like, the Sixers and Bucks. Sixers have 43 wins. The Bucks have 40. They have more than that. 53
and
50.
Let's just say,
But then since the Bucks won this midseason tournament, they get a 5-win boost, and they overtake the Sixers, so they get the first seed instead of the second.
That is interesting.
What about, instead of doing midseason, what if they do it earlier in the season? Like, you do it, like, Thanksgiving time. The same concept. And the win boost, obviously, it doesn't matter if you add it then or now, but you add it at the end of the season. So, like, you do it earlier, so there's more ambiguity to how the season will end.
And they just have this win boost in their back pocket, kind of.
Right. So, like, it gives teams that, like, hey, I'm currently 4 games back, but these guys have a 2 game. They got second in this tournament, and they have 2 games ahead of me, so I'm actually 5 games back, and like it's more of a race to like keep that gap closer, because like right now this season's kind of close, but like some seasons right at this point in time, some of those gaps are pretty big. I like the win total,
still have no
issue. I like that. My only thought is that I think a team would just use it to rest guys. They'd be like, okay, we're 2 games back, but we're actually 3 games up because we have the 5 game win boost, so we're not. Like, it's we can relax a little bit.
Well, but that means they at least they won the tournament, right?
They won the tournament, So they know that.
But I really like the conference home court thing in the finals, though.
I like that. But as you were kind of talking about it, I thought about what if the team that wins it automatically, regardless of seeding, gets first round or gets home court in the first round?
Regardless of seeding. So, like, if they're like the 6th seed,
they get the home court.
Yeah, but that doesn't give anybody an incentive then to try to get the best record. Like at the end of the season, if you have guys who are like, I'm either going to face this guy, and they have home court advantage, doesn't matter if I get first or second pick. Like,
are you freezing up there, Joey?
Oh, sorry. I don't know, like, at the end of the season, like, some of the best points are, like, when you've got these teams that are, like, super close together, right? And having them kind of push for it.
Oh, I guess I can see that. Like, if you're a fifth seed, you're like, I don't really care if we stay fifth seed because we're getting home court advantage anyway.
Right.
Right.
And then if it was, like, the Bucks that won it or somebody like that, they're like, well, what was the point of winning that? We're the number one seed.
Right.
We're home court anyway. Okay.
Right.
I just have a way to...
If we got first or second, it didn't matter. If we weren't getting home court regardless. So, like, why care?
What if you got to pick your opponent? in the first round.
Nobody would. No team would ever pick their opponent, though.
No team would ever pick their opponent? Oh, I would. You don't think Memphis would pick their opponent?
I was going to say, the only team that would is
Memphis. Memphis would be like, yeah, like, Golden one, State, first round.
The number one pick in the midseason tourney, we pick Golden State.
Oh, right, we'll figure something out. But that was,
so what did we come up with, though? I mean, realistically, what we decided is that it can't just be money. There has to be some to be sort something. Of like actual like season or
implications.
Some implication. Because
a draft pick, a
state. Players aren't going to do it just court. For some extra money.
I really like the home court in the finals thing. That's pretty cool.
I do like the home court in the finals thing. The home court in the finals is probably my favorite aspect of this conversation. Well done, Chris.
Yeah. That's the only thing that like makes sense. That's why like wind boosts, that's never been done before. And it kind of feels weird.
Yeah.
But like, how else do you incentivize a player? Unless it's money. But like, these guys make so much money, it doesn't matter. And you can't just make up a trophy.
Like, I would like this if they reduced the games. So let's say they took it from 82 to 72. They replaced it with this midseason tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that's where the win boost came from. So it's like, ooh. It's like theoretically like, hey, you're getting like an extra few games, but
yeah,
that I like. Now I didn't like it if it was like, all right, everybody's playing 82, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, these guys got an extra 5 games. But I'd like the win boost if the games are taken away. So it's like, hey, we don't even have to play these. Let's just win this tournament, and then we're 5 games clear of everybody.
I just like the OT. I like the 3v3. Idea.
Yeah, and the 3v3 is cool.
Yeah,
because then you can see who the teams are sending. They're like, all right, hey, the Bucks are sending Drew, Middleton, and Giannis. Uh-oh, they really want to win this thing. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool.
That'd be kind of cool.
I think that would be kind of cool, guys.
I think we could put all of these together and make something pretty awesome.
Yeah, a draft compensation.
Ooh, draft compensation, home court advantage. Maybe it's like a tiered approach.
Yeah.
Home court advantage to the winner. Draft pick.
Home court advantage to the conference that wins.
Yeah, draft pick percentage to like second place guy.
Yeah.
Third place gets like the win boost. They get like a 3-game win, or like a 2-game win boost.
I like it. Yeah, you get, like you said, you know, whatever. First gets X amount of game boost. Second place gets X amount of game boost. You can figure it out. I'm sure we'll all be thinking about this all week. So maybe next week we'll come back with our refined this box out boys.
Next week we're going to talk about the trade deadline.
Trade deadline. Oh, all right.
I think we should move the pod to Thursday.
Oh, we could do that.
We can do that.
We'll talk offline. Well, that is it for us tonight. Join us next week to talk more NBA basketball. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch at The Box Out Boys. Slide in those DMs. Join us live Wednesdays around 8:30. Send us an email to theboxoutboys@gmail.com. And as always, like, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to this at now. We very much appreciate that. For Chris, Joey, and Adam, I'm Tyson. Until next time, a box out.